Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. The image of Deep Throat of Watergate fame? Well, I always thought of him as a dashing patriot eager to protect the country from a dangerous, out-of-control president. But that image may not really fit. A new book out from the University Press of Kansas suggests that Mark Felt, the number two man at the FBI, had another and equally compelling motivation that turned him into the one of the most famous secret sources in the history of American journalism. More on a new book titled Leak, Why Mark Felt Became Deep Throat, in just a moment. Later on today, a look at President Obama's surprising announcement on immigration. But we begin with why Mark Felt became Deep Throat. Our guest is Max Holland, out with the book Leak. He speaks tonight at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library. And Max, good to have you.
Thanks for having
me. Welcome
to
Kansas City. Well, Mark Felt kept this secret for more than three decades, which I guess says something about him. There are words applied to him, words like inscrutable and impenetrable. How well do those words fit?
Well, I think if you actually look at what he did, the pattern and the pace of it, it leads to really only one conclusion, that he leaked in order to destroy his real and imagined rivals for the job as director of the FBI, which is what he really wanted to become.
He was number two, and he wanted to succeed the legend Mr. Hoover, right?
Right. He was not only number two. In the last 2 years, I'd say, of Hoover's life, Felt was really running the Bureau. I mean, Hoover was way past his prime. So when President Nixon appointed Pat Gray, a complete unknown, you know, as undistinguished as his last name, Felt was upset. Now, a lot of the senior executives left because they thought Nixon wouldn't appoint an insider. But Felt stayed, and he was sort of an Iago-type character. He whispered in Gray's ear, "I'm with you against all the old Hooverites." And to the Hooverites, he said, "This guy is a loser. We've got to get rid of him."
So he was a real player then?
Felt. Yes.
Yeah. Well, why did he decide then in 2005, Max, to, you know, step forward and identify himself for all the world to see as Deep Throat?
Well, I don't really think he decided that. I think he was pushed by the family, which thought there was going to be a real windfall in a book by him. I think if he really had all his marbles, he never would have come forward. I mean, he didn't stay in the shadows for some unknown reason. He stayed in the shadows because he knew if he ever came out and his actions were scrutinized, they wouldn't stand the explanation that he would put forward.
What was the difference? What did he say? What explanations did he put forward, and what would not have stood up to the test of time there?
Well, the standard explanation was that he was a patriot, a principled whistleblower, and Felt had leaked in order to show that Pat Gray wasn't capable of holding the Bureau, control of the Bureau like Hoover. And he knew that if this came out, while a lot of people were alive, the people at the FBI who had investigated Watergate, they would have said this is completely untrue. The FBI was not hindered in its investigation, and Felt was leaking for some other reason.
Hmm. What kind of shape was he in 2005, physically and mentally, when he actually stepped forward?
Well, he had had at least one stroke, and like a lot of older people, you know, your inhibitions diminish as you get elderly, and you know, one day he would say he was Deep Throat, the next day he would deny it vigorously. It kind of depended on what day you interviewed him.
You know, Bob Woodward, the Washington Post reporter who worked on these Watergate stories with Carol Bernstein, said he never really knew why Mark Felt talked, Max. What did Bob Woodward say about that? What was his own theory?
Well, it's more like theories because one of the things that got me started is it's sort of a kaleidoscope. When you look at Woodward's explanations of Felt, they, you know, change over time. First, he's this principled whistleblower trying to protect the office of the presidency against Nixon.
Which is what the movie more or less said.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, constitutional reasons he's leaking. And then when The Secret Man comes out, which is Woodward's book about Felt, suddenly Felt becomes a bureaucrat trying to protect the FBI against Nixon. But that doesn't even hold water, because if you know anything about the FBI, you know that Nixon couldn't possibly appoint one man and take over the place. The Bureau is notorious in Washington for its independence.
Absolutely.
And its culture. And, 40 years later, we're still living with the effects of the Hoover culture there. So the fact that Nixon was threatening the independence of the FBI is just preposterous.
Hmm. Would the Watergate saga and the crimes of the Nixon administration have come to light if not for Mark Felt and his leaks to the Washington Post?
Well, that's a very interesting question. That's maybe the $64 question.
Yeah.
I think the legal process would have eventually forced the same conflict or confrontation that we had in the spring of 73. Might have come a couple months later, but I think it was inevitable. You know, the wheels of justice, there's this old saying, the wheels of justice grind slowly, but they grind extremely fine. And that was going to be the case here, too.
So you're saying that Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein simply, they advanced the process, they advanced the public information about this by just a few months, as opposed to really uncovering something that wouldn't have been uncovered to begin with?
Right. Well, there's a couple things. First of all, their reporting kind of protected the prosecutors during the summer and fall of 72, the local U.S. prosecutors, in going ahead and investigating the case. It was in the news, it protected them against pressures that might have been exerted upon them. So the press played an important role. But the fact is, it was the prosecutors, you know, who were closing the pincers on the burglars and getting them, one of them, eventually James McCord, to crack and say that perjury had been committed. And it was that legal process that eventually, forced John Dean then to turn state's evidence.
So the prosecution was all for Woodward and Bernstein doing what they were doing because they took the pressure off their work.
Well, they were for it, but they were also, of course, they weren't happy about seeing the fruits of the FBI's investigation in the newspaper. They didn't like that because it made witnesses possibly less inclined to talk to the FBI. So they were both for it, but they worried about it. But they didn't learn anything from it. And one of the points I'd like to make clear is that, you know, it's completely wholesome for the Washington Post to investigate Watergate in the summer and fall and keep tabs on what the FBI was doing. But it wasn't like the FBI wasn't doing anything. The FBI was always ahead of the Washington Post.
So the story was going to come out eventually anyway.
Yes.
It's just a question of how much time we're talking about here, how much more time was gained by the Post doing these stories and letting the public in on it as opposed to just a few months down the road.
Right. If you look at every Post story and who their source was and look at every FBI interview, you'll see that the FBI was interviewing everyone who was a Washington Post source weeks, sometimes months before the Post got to them. There was never a story in the Washington Post that came as a surprise to the FBI.
So the greatest story, arguably, in the annals of American journalism, you're saying, really wasn't worth all that much.
Well, like I say, it was important because it was a sensitive political investigation. It was important for a leading newspaper to get it out before the election, as much of it as possible. I mean, the legal process is one thing and the public interest is another. So what the Post was doing was fine, admirable, and important. It's just that they didn't uncover the Watergate scandal. It was the legal process aided by press attention. You know, when you listen to the presidential conversations, one thing you realize is whatever's in the newspaper is always on the agenda of the administration, especially in those days when you had much less media. What is in the newspaper counts. You know, politicians feel they have to react to it or, fend it off or whatever. But the fact is, it was the legal process that resulted in the scandal that eventually forced Nixon out of office.
You know, Max, is it possible that that legal process might have been compromised at some point because of the highly political nature of what the FBI was doing and the fact the Post was putting those stories out to the public sort of allowed the investigation to continue apace as opposed to getting throttled by high up people in the administration?
Well, that's a very good question because the Post at one point after the election worried that the grand jury process had been skewed, that the prosecutors hadn't brought the case that should have been brought before the grand jurors. So they took this unusual step of trying to interview the grand jurors. And when they did that, the one grand juror who talked she expressed, you know, admiration for the prosecutors. Earl Silbert, she thought, was doing a fine job.
Mm-hmm.
So it turned out that the process wasn't being sued. You had to bring pressure on the Watergate defendants who weren't talking. And the only way you could do that is convict them, sentence them to long prison terms, and then maybe they'll start talking. That's exactly what happened.
Yeah, how did Bob Woodward and Mark Felt meet to begin with?
Woodward was still in the Navy, and he was carrying encrypted or decrypted messages to the NSC, and he met Felt in an anteroom. Felt was, I think, then the number three in the FBI, and Woodward was wondering about what he would do after he got out of the Navy.
And the two talked about that, right?
Right, and he kept up with him. And when Woodward went to the Post, well, when he went into journalism, he kept up with Felt. And then the attempted assassination of George Wallace in May 72 was the first time that Woodward used Felt as a source.
So it had happened prior to Watergate then?
Correct.
Yeah. You know, one of the other great revelations in this book, Leak, Why Mark Felt Became Deep Throat, is this idea that Deep Throat was not speaking only to the Washington Post. He also had a buddy at Time Magazine.
Yeah, that was my proudest find, actually.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, my proudest find was Time never got the credit that the Washington Post got because it came out weekly. And, you know, it was a little late sometimes. But the fact is it broke more of the important stories in retrospect than even the Washington Post. In Time was the first story that associated the plumbers with the Watergate break-in. In Time, the wiretaps that had been instituted on NSC aides to Kissinger was revealed for the first
time.
That's
interesting.
And these were leaks that Felt had given to Time. And the reason he gave them to Time is because there was a reporter there named Sandy Smith from Chicago, famous for covering the mob. And he was very trusted and known by the upper echelon of the FBI, whereas his cub reporter, Bob Woodward, was an unknown commodity. I mean, Felt didn't know whether he could trust him, and as it turned out, he couldn't. But the fact is everybody knew that Sandy Smith had it written into his contract that if Time were ever sued for libel, he still didn't have to reveal his sources.
He was that tight on that front. That's a reporter's reporter.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
He would take phone calls. He wouldn't take phone calls in the office. He'd go off to pay phones to call his sources because he didn't want his even that tapped or tracked.
That's amazing. But again, so Bob Woodward was sort of running behind Time magazine for much of the early going of Watergate.
A lot of times, Time would be coming out with a story, and Woodward and Bernstein, and their stories appeared on Mondays. Woodward and Bernstein would have to race to the office on Sunday to come up with something in the Post of equal value.
So why didn't Time magazine get more credit?
You know, Sandy Smith didn't write a book about what he did. I mean, he never wrote a book about any of his
didn't win
career.
A Pulitzer either.
Didn't win a Pulitzer for Watergate. But Time, if you look at all the Watergate books, they all say that, you know, the closest competitor to the Washington Post was Time magazine.
How did you get started on this book to begin with? What drew your interest? Because there has been sort of this renewed interest as we approach, what is this, the 40th anniversary of the Watergate break-in?
Well, in 2007, I read that Woodward and Bernstein had sold their papers to the University of Texas for $5 million. And I've done a lot of archival work. And when you do, you realize there's always something in the papers that's not commonly known. So I wondered, you know, what's in there that we don't know about? So when I started looking into the relationship of Deep Throat with Woodward and Bernstein, I noticed that, you know, their characterization or depiction of him had fluctuated. It was like a kaleidoscope. It started out very principled, then he became this protective bureaucrat. And then he was a truth teller. Another time they had a predatory relationship. It's sort of all over the place, depending on who he's talking to, meaning Woodward. So that sort of piqued my interest. And there was something I just couldn't, it just didn't sit well with me that Mark Felt would leak, you know, out of principle, because I've done a lot of work on the FBI under Hoover. And those guys,
they always had ulterior motivations, you're saying.
Felt supposedly said that there was a switchblade mentality at the White House, but there was a real switchblade mentality at the FBI in the 60s. I mean, those guys played hardball. They played for keeps.
We're visiting this morning with Max Holland. He's the author of a new book, Leak, Why Mark Felt Became Deep Throat. You can see him and hear him this evening at 6:30. He'll be speaking at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library, the Central Library Branch at 14 West 10th Street. You can RSVP for that event at kclibrary.org. Well, so how did Woodward get the idea that Mark Felt wanted to reveal some very closely held secrets here?
Well, what happened is Felt's first leaks were to Time magazine. And then Woodward and Bernstein were assigned to the story, and they were getting nowhere, basically. And so Woodward, one weekend in August, went to see Felt. And Felt said, okay, I'll cooperate. And, you know, then he set down all these parameters. You're not to quote me. You're not to acknowledge my existence. You're not to tell anybody that I'm your source, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so then from about mid-August 72 until right before the November election, Felt was a leading source for the Washington Post articles, which I don't know if they were every other day, but they were every third or fourth day. Mm-hmm. And he was doing that to show President Nixon that the acting director, Pat Gray, couldn't keep the lid on this very politically sensitive story. And therefore, you had to get rid of Pat Gray, and the natural heir would be Mark Felt.
How risky was it for Mark Felt to do what he was doing?
Well, he was a very vain man, and I think he definitely thought he could get away with it. You know, the FBI did a lot of these in the what they called counterintelligence programs, COINTELPROs, against the U.S. Communist Party, Black Panthers, you know, the New Left. They would use the media to sow dissension and sort of wage psychological warfare mm-hmm. on organizations that they opposed. So I'm sure he was very confident he could get away with it, and he almost did. It was just by the strangest roundabout way that Nixon learned that Felt was leaking.
How did he learn that?
Well, unfortunately, this wasn't a point I could pin down with absolute certainty. But according to the presidential recordings, one day, a lawyer for the offending publication, and I don't know if that was the Post or Time, called up Henry Peterson, who was the head of the criminal division, and said that Mark Felt is leaking to my publication. This was a counsel to the publication. Henry Peterson proceeded to tell John Dean, the White House counsel. John Dean told Haldeman, and Haldeman told the president.
Why did the counsel for the offending publication reveal that information? That's breathtaking to me.
Right. Well, I think it's because they felt the stories were gross exaggerations, and in any case,
who felt the stories were gross exaggerations?
The counsel. The counsel was identified as someone who had worked in the Justice Department mm-hmm. prior to becoming a private counsel, and apparently he was very upset at seeing a government investigation appear in the newspaper in gross, distorted form.
And for a lawyer, for either a newspaper or a magazine to give that up, that just takes my breath away.
It's pretty amazing.
And what was Nixon's reaction, Max, when he got the news?
He was stunned. He knew who Mark Felt was. He didn't know him well. He said, why the hell is
he
doing
this? Why
would he do
it? Yeah.
Why the hell is he doing this?
But he didn't get rid of him.
Well, he couldn't. John Mitchell, who knew Felt better, said, you know, don't fire him because he knows too much. And if you fire him, you know, the next day he'll be on NBC television and spilling every secret we have in the administration. So just keep him on. But tell Pat Gray to watch out for him and don't trust him. And they did tell Pat Gray. Pat Gray was kind of naive, and he went to Felt and said, are you leaking? And Felt said no.
Oh, no. Wouldn't do something like that.
Right.
I'm the number two man here at the FBI. I'm very loyal to you, Mr. Gray.
Yes, I got your picture
yeah.
right in a prominent position on my wall.
Again, our guest today, Max Holland, he's the author of Leak, Why Mark Felt Became Deep Throat. If you want to join our conversation, our number 816-235-2888. Our email address is up to date at kcur.org. Whose idea was it to meet in parking garages, Max? And I'm wondering how often that really happened, because even Ben Bradley, the legendary editor of the Washington Post, has been quoted recently in another book that's out as saying he, too, wondered to what extent Bob Woodward had exaggerated these mysterious meetings in parking garages. And please tell me those things really happened, because that just much of my career was based on the idea that cool stuff like that actually happened.
Well, I think some of it happened. I don't know how often it happened, and it's... You know, one thing I realized is that all the President's Men really has to be seen as, in the context of what was called in those days, the new journalism. The new journalism was using novelistic techniques and applying them to nonfiction, like a famous book, In Cold Blood, about the Clutter family, was considered one of the first examples of that. And if you put all the President's Men in that context, suddenly a lot of the things that are questioned about it makes sense, because they're embellishing the story and, you know, hyping it to make a more compelling tale.
Well, to what extent was it hyped?
We don't know. I mean, all we have is Woodward's account of that now. Felt is obviously not able to talk, never talked about that.
Felt never was asked, hey, how often did you actually meet with Woodward in the parking garages at night?
No, by the time he came out as Deep Throat, he couldn't answer those kinds of questions. So I'm inclined to think it happened, but maybe not as often as Woodward made it out to be. But to my mind, those details, maybe they're sexy, but really it's his depiction of Felt which I find troublesome, because it was a very subjective one. You know, the only person probably who acted the role better than Hal Holbrook of Deep Throat was Mark Felt, because he fooled Woodward. He made him think that Woodward were on the side, you know, on the side together against his president. And the question is, when did Woodward realize that it just didn't add up?
Or if Woodward ever realized that, you wonder.
Well, he had to when Ruckelshaus told him the story of how Felt was gotten rid of. And I think he probably knew before that, because he says he went to look at the FBI documents in 1992 when they were released. If you read through the documents and compare them to the Post coverage, that's when you realize that the Post didn't break the story, that everything they were reporting, the FBI already knew. So Felt telling Woodward that the FBI is not conducting a thorough investigation was completely untrue.
You know, what's interesting about all this to me is Bob Woodward himself, who is, of course, this legendary journalist, still is today in American journalism. And so much of his work has always been sort of based on secret sources, you know, two sources. And it's sort of been a trust me reader attitude. You know, trust me, I've got the right stuff. My books have always held up, and they have held up, in fairness to him, over the years. A lot of 98% of his work seems to have held up pretty well over the years. But what does this all this say about Woodward and his credibility, at least in your view, Max?
Well, probably the single most troubling thing I found is when you took Deep Throat, you know, their typed out versions of their interviews with him, and you compared those to all the President's Men. For example, there's great care taken in putting certain phrases like switchblade mentality in quotes. But in the book, everything Deep Throat said is a quote. Right away, that's a little problematic. Sentences are rearranged, move around to make the thing seem more coherent. Sometimes the meaning of what Felt said to Woodward is subtly altered. And then, most troubling to me, was that in the book, there are certain sentences that Felt is, quote, Deep Throat is quoted as saying, that are not in the notes whatsoever. When I asked Woodward about this, he said, well, you must remember that we wrote the book about a year after these meetings. As I reviewed my notes, I had a better recollection of what Felt said to me. That was his explanation.
So he was going on memory on some of those quotes then. Well, so Woodward and Bernstein certainly knew they were opening themselves up to some unprecedented scrutiny here when they donated, or they didn't donate, when they sold their papers to the University of Texas. They knew some of these questions might be coming down the pike at some point then.
Well, I guess, what happens after 40 years, you're this icon. You don't feel you can be questioned. You've fended off the revisionists, the skeptics. I mean, a lot of crazy books have been written about Watergate. You know, it was a call about a Colgaro ring and other nonsense. It was a coup d'etat against Nixon. So they feel confident that they could lump any questioning into that category.
I got to ask you one more question about the movie, because, again, it sticks with you so well. Did Bob Woodward really move a flower pot or something like that on his apartment balcony to signal to Deep Throat that he wanted to get together?
We have to take his word on that, yeah.
You don't know for sure?
No.
Yeah, okay. Again, there's this idea that he leaked not only to Mark Felt, he leaked to others as well. At what point did the FBI become suspicious, Max, that Felt was leaking information?
Well, when the book comes out in the spring of 74, right away there's a sense that someone in the FBI is Deep Throat.
Has got to be given the information.
Right. And in fact, the number one culprit, I mean, the number one suspect immediately became Mark Felt. I mean, people, there was this great editor from the Washington Times-Herald, which was a newspaper that the Post had bought, named mm-hmm. Frank Waldrop. And as soon as this story about Deep Throat and all these leaks came out, he said, it's Mark Felt. And the Washingtonian magazine also fingered Felt, and Felt denied it. In fact, to show you how clever he was one of the first people to say, oh, I think Deep Throat must be a composite figure. He doesn't really exist as a single individual.
Well, that's so interesting because, you know, even 35 years, correct me if I'm wrong, in the aftermath of Watergate, there were websites and parlor games almost in Washington about who Deep Throat really was. And there was the guesses were still all over the map at that point. There was no consensus, at least in that I ever saw, that Mark Felt was the guy. He was named as one of the possible people, but never any consensus that, hey, he's the guy.
The more time that went on, the more bizarre and Byzantine the speculation became. And then, of course, it went back to the guy who was identified in the first place.
Mm-hmm. So why wasn't Felt ever then even prosecuted in the wake of that? And why did he leave the FBI?
Well, he wasn't prosecuted because he had never given any documents, per se, to Woodward.
Ah, and that's where the line gets crossed.
Right.
There's always an oral communication.
Right. And it's very hard to prove, you know, oral transmission of information because you've got basically two people, the one who received it and the one who gave it. And Felt denied it up, down, and sideways. But he was investigated by the FBI after he left in May of 73 because there was a leak, a huge leak of FBI documents to a New York Times reporter named John Crutzen, and Felt was suspected of doing that. Now, he had not done that, but because he was being suspected as Deep Throat, it was thought he had also done that. So he was investigated for both, being Deep Throat and for leaking these documents to Crutzen.
And Crutzen, that's an unrelated case, I imagine.
It was about Segretti, Donald Segretti. It was Watergate related, okay. But it was not something Deep Throat had done per se. So he could successfully deny and truthfully deny it leaked to Crutzen, and he could also say, I didn't leak to Woodward either. But one thing I found is they talked to his secretary, and of course secretaries know a lot, and she said, they asked her, did you ever see John Crutzen in Mark's office? You know, did he ever come out with a big bag or a briefcase full of documents? No, no, no. But Bob Woodward used to call here all the time.
All the time. Wanted to know. And so ultimately then, why did Felt leave the FBI?
Well, he didn't want to undergo an internal investigation. And the investigation I'm talking about was done by the successor to Bill Ruckelshaus. Mm-hmm. Ruckelshaus was director when Felt left, and they had an agreement, if you retire, I won't investigate. But the successor to Ruckelshaus did investigate against Ruckelshaus' better judgment, and that's when Felt became known inside as being Deep Throat.
So the FBI knew he was Deep Throat for years and years and years.
Yes, they knew internally. I mean, but, of course, they didn't ever want to admit they had people like that.
Who leaked to reporters like me or Bob Woodward. Yeah.
Exactly.
FBI people don't do anything like that, right?
No, that's beyond
the FBI. Yeah. What does Carl Bernstein today, Max, say about all of this? Has he been on the record about all these different controversies?
Well, Woodward and Bernstein are, you know, they're very close. They talk every day. They're very dependent on one another, and they present a very unified front. So Woodward's reaction to my book was some on the order of, well, there's nothing in that book that isn't in my book, The Secret Man. It's all in there. And Bernstein's reaction was something like, well, I'll be less polite than Bob is, and this book is a work of, you know, those revisionists who want to exculpate Nixon for his crimes and running a criminal enterprise out of the White House. Da, 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 you know, blah, 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 blah.
Well, that's pretty good obfuscation.
Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty good for reporters.
Right. I mean, my book is not at all an doesn't exculpate Nixon at all.
Yeah.
It shows, you know, he was guilty of what he did do. But the fact is the story isn't a fairy tale like Woodward and Bernstein try to make it out to be.
What was it like interviewing Bob Woodward? How tough of an interview was that for you?
Very difficult, because he's I had a journalism professor once who said, always remember that, you know, the guy you're going to interview gets up in the morning and puts his pants on one leg at a time, just like you. Still, it was very intimidating to interview him. He pretended not to have ever heard of me or knew why I was calling, you know, I think to make me feel insignificant relative to him.
Yeah.
You know, he said...
Where did you interview him?
Over the phone. Well, first, my first conversation with him was an interview about having an interview. I don't know anything. Everything I've said is in my book. There's nothing to add. I don't want to answer questions like, you know, you at 11:43, you say you called Felton. It's actually 11:54. I don't want to answer questions like that.
So how did you convince him?
Well, you know, being persistent. I mean, he's persistent, and you've got to be persistent with him.
Mm-hmm.
So then we did have one conversation, and I didn't really have that many questions for him, but they were important ones, such as the difference between his notes and what they say Felt said in the book.
And he finally felt that he had to respond to some of that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And he knew you had really pored through the papers, and you knew what you were talking about, I gather.
I think he got that impression after about 10 minutes of talking.
You must have kept really careful timelines as you did your research for what the paper showed, what was in the book, what the Post reporter. There must have been a lot of two-dimensional, three-dimensional chess going on here with you.
Exactly. Probably the most important document I made was the stories in the Post, you know, what the sources were, what Woodward said about the source and all the presence men and the secret man, and what the archive showed, which at times were all, you know, different things.
Gabby in Kansas City, Kansas writes us this: I've heard Deep Throat and Woodward being compared to WikiLeaks and Julian Assange. I don't think it's the same. It's easy to slap some documents up online, much harder to do investigative journalism. What does your guest think about this comparison?
Yeah, I don't think it's an apt comparison either. And again, I would like to make clear that as a journalist, you know, I bow down. I give all the kudos to their coverage in the summer and fall of 72. To me, the problem is not their coverage. It's when they wrote about their coverage.
Mm-hmm.
That's when all the embellishments and fairy tale aspects enter into it. But I agree with the person who asked the question. Assange just threw up a whole bunch of documents, and why not have the documents from other governments? I mean, the United States isn't the only government that has secret papers. Let's throw everybody's out.
Yeah. Maybe just a final point, Max. What was it like going through Woodward and Bernstein's papers? And are they online, or do you have to go to Texas to look at them?
The ones I wanted, which are basically Deep Throat's notes, actually were online. And I looked through the register and ordered what else I wanted to see. There isn't that much. I mean, a lot of their papers are just drafts of their book, which, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, what I really wanted were the raw notes from their interviews with sources.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, some of them are still being held back. So it's pretty slim pickings in some respects.
Well, Max, I enjoyed having you. Thanks for coming in.
Great to be here, Steve.
You bet. That's Max Holland. He's the author of a new book, Leak, Why Mark Felt Became Deep Throat. Again, he speaks tonight at 6:30 at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library, the Central Branch, 14 West 10th Street, RSVP at KC Library.